Hockey Central at noon is Hockey Central at any time you want it to be. When you subscribe to the podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand. Nobody does it better. This is Hockey Central on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
What a way to kick off the week. Welcome to Hockey Central. Jeff Merrick for Darren Millard around the table. Gord Stelic and Todd Hlischko. Where should we begin? Well, we'll begin by telling you who's on the program today. That is Jarmo Kekäläinen, Columbus Blue Jackets general manager, who threw the first wrench into the affairs on Friday evening by selecting Pierre-Luc Dubois of Cape Breton, number 3 overall, and allowing Jesse Puljujärvi to fall to number 4 to the Edmonton Oilers, because something nice always happens to the Edmonton Oilers come draft time.
It appears at the draft it does, anyway.
I'm sorry?
Until the actual season begins, historically, but at the draft it does.
We have higher aspirations for our friends in Edmonton this
always
year.
Always have. You kidding me? If it ever comes together, in all seriousness.
It sounds like Peter Chiarelli's not done, too. Because now, and he's even intimated this, that now, by acquiring, you know, 4th overall, the Finnish winger, it sounds as if now they do have, let's just say, a duplication in a few positions, maybe on the right side, and you can use that to bring in a first-pairing defenseman for Oscar Klefbom. It sounds like, but we shall see.
Well, I think that's got to be their number one priority, obviously. And Jesse Puljujärvi, he's going to be a stud for that team in Edmonton. They've got to be extremely happy.
Concerns about the knee surgery at all? He's not playing in rookie camp, says he's going to be okay.
Listen, he's young. He's going to bounce back. It's not a major surgery. It's nothing serious. He's going to be fine. And I'm sure that Edmonton did their due diligence before selecting him. So I'm sure that's not going to be any problem.
You know, it's funny what you say. It just shows the modern marvels of medicine. The fact that, I mean, Morgan Riley, for example, you know, missing all that time in junior. And that used to be a killer. That used to be, you know, and rightly so. Rightly so. If a guy had a significant injury playing NCAA or playing junior, and yeah, quite often they never got, it hampered them. You would know that from, and now it's unbelievable what's gone on that way. Cause you're right. In other days, you'd all of a sudden would be scrutinizing it probably a little bit more.
Yeah. Puljujärvi, an outstanding player on the Rush. You wonder if there's a future between him and Connor McDavid on the horizon for those two teams. So Jarmo Kekäläinen will join us. We'll talk about the Columbus Blue Jackets electing to keep the number 3 overall pick. Calgary coveted that spot. I think Vancouver was probably in on that mix as well. Would suspect perhaps Montreal too, but they keep it. And they go a little bit off the board with Pierre-Luc Dubois. You guys were there covering for radio. What were your thoughts? We're going to get to Austin Matthews, and we'll get to Patrick Laine and the QOs and free agency on the horizon. But what were your thoughts on what Columbus, who in a lot of ways provided the first shock of the draft in a number 3 with Pierre-Luc Dubois?
Well, it's become such a, you know, a media and fan-friendly, fan-centric draft. So you're there, and fans are all of a sudden experts without even seeing these guys play. So they know they can rhyme it off how it's all ranked. And I compared it to the Florida Panthers taking Barkov a couple of years ago, and when Seth Jones went down to number 4 overall, and you said, oh my God, the Nashville Predators died and went to heaven, and they did when they got Seth Jones. But look what Barkov was for the Florida Panthers. And if you like the guy, go get him. And shouldn't Columbus have traded down? No, you like the guy, you risk even going down one pick for what? A third round pick or something like that?
Yeah.
You risk not getting the guy. So, you know, Jarmo was true to, it was that funny balloon he kept throwing out. We talked about it Friday about he's the only Finnish guy he's trying to profess who's anti-Finnish, you know, when it comes to players. So if that's the case, he held true to form with that pick.
And I think it's a situation where Pierre-Luc Dubois was that player that was a very safe pick because he is unbelievable in all three zones. And Jesse Puljujärvi, he's a great player as well. But I think that they like the fact that this guy is reliable in every single zone. It's a safe bet. They love the fact that he's playing center right now.
Because they moved Ryan Johansson.
Isn't that it, that right there? Isn't it just that?
The centerman, of course.
Because after December, I mean, they had him on the line with Svechnikov and Lazarev in Cape Breton to start the season. One of the best lines in the CHL. They loaded up, bringing in guys like Mikhail Joly from Rimouski. All of a sudden, he ends up in the center position. By the way, a position he's never played a day in his life. I mean, other than spot duty here and there, maybe on a power play.
That tells you something to his credit, how good he is if it comes that naturally to him.
They wanted a center.
Yeah.
They wanted a center, and they figured he was our next best guy. They could have gone down Clayton Keller, Logan Brown route, but went Pierre-Luc Dubois.
And you, I know you had an interview with Kekäläinen, and I know you asked him that question, where do they see him playing?
Center.
And he specifically said a centerman.
Yeah. And how about how the trickle-down goes? I know I'm getting, but that's what you do. You get ahead of yourself, but the Calgary Flames now every year, they've got to be thrilled where Sam Bennett went, thrilled about Sean Monahan, and now thrilled again about Tkachuk. Doesn't mean they're going to win the Stanley Cup, and it doesn't mean the other guys aren't better prospects that went ahead. But at the time, that kind of team as well, and what they probably were projected, they've had three instances of a better than slated player fell their way. And, you know, the first two cases are already bearing fruit.
They are indeed. Let's get to the big headline, though, coming off of Friday. You mentioned on the radio this morning, Gord, and it was perfectly put, too. It wasn't so much of a draft pick as much as it was a coronation for Austin Matthews. This is the one, you know, when teams get together and, you know, after all the scouting is done and they sit down and they go around the table and say, okay, who do you think should be number one? I would imagine this must have been as consensus as Connor McDavid for the Toronto Maple Leafs. I can't imagine one person on that staff saying, I think we should lean towards the Finnish winger line A.
That's really the way it evolved. And that said a lot also about Matthews maintaining and sustaining that number one overall spot. You know, you get that hype in October and quite often you're being scrutinized and people pick it apart. I can remember the New York Islanders even. They wouldn't tell you about John Tavares, right? You assumed they were going to take him.
They threw out so many.
It was weird.
Oh, Matt Duchene, Victor Hedman, which way are we? Remember, because Charles, that was fascinating, because Charles Wong went and met all three of those players.
Yeah.
He's spending a day with Matt Duchene. He's going to go spend a day with Victor Hedman. I think maybe just to throw everybody off the scene.
Possibly, or as it turned out, likely. But I thought it was a strange dynamic. Todd and I are doing it on radio. You're down there doing it on TV. Yeah. And it was, the coronation. Like, everybody who came on a Toronto sense, Friday night there was zero intrigue, which normally you're going to the draft going, okay, who are they going to take? You know, like in Columbus's case, you're picking third overall.
Sure.
No, none of that. You have had a C-grade team all season that you're supporting, and you get a rock star moment. You get a Stanley Cup playoff moment. And you start chanting, go Leafs, go. You start chanting Matthews' name. I mean, all these things. And then when he's picked.
Drowned out by Buffalo fans.
Yeah,
by the way.
And then when he's picked, it's 15 minutes of all that, the residue. And then it settles down to being a draft, albeit the first round with the pomp and circumstance and that. Yeah. We got a kick, and we saw those guys, like seven guys or so with Austin Matthews T-shirts. And as he's walking through, they're doing, we're not worthy. You know, the old Mike Myers thing. And he almost didn't know how to handle
all
the
things. He was shell-shocked, I think.
Yeah.
He was sitting there, and he's going through the tunnel, and they're all looking at him. And Gordon was like, why didn't you give him a wave? And I said, well, because he's overwhelmed right now. He didn't realize.
I didn't say it to him.
Well, no, not to him.
But, we all dream of those moments, right?
And you know, the thing about Patrick Laine as well is like, you know, there was the you know, is he going to go? Is he going to move up? Obviously, it comes down to what you said, Gord. What did Toronto need? They would have been lynched had they not taken Austin Matthews by everyone. This was the guy, the centerman that they've always needed. And you know what? He is going to be a stud, but so is Patrick Laine. And I spoke about that in the past. The Winnipeg Jets were in an absolutely perfect position. They didn't have to make any decision whatsoever. They're taking one or the other. And Laine lands in their lap. They've got a fantastic player as well.
That's what Kevin Cheveldayoff, right after the lottery, was saying, well, we won the lottery.
Yep.
And even when I spoke to him on Friday after the Laine pick, and his first thing was, well, after we won the lottery, it became obvious that. Like in his mind, he was getting Laine, and that was winning the lottery.
The winning the lottery still is Austin Matthews. I still think if Winnipeg went first overall, it'd be Austin Matthews. But I get when we've been at drafts where you have the easy one. I mean, again, a lot of years ago, but sitting sixth overall, and we knew that the top five guys, who would they be? That was the Zarly Zalapskin, Sean Anderson, Joe Murphy. So it is a long time ago.
Yeah.
But of all people, the New Jersey Devils upset the apple cart because they were big on psychology testing. They took Neil Brady.
Yeah.
So Vinny, we knew one of them was going to land. Vinny Domfus lands in our lap, sixth overall. You know, so they involve no astuteness and one of the and again, it's a way, but that's sometimes how things work.
You know, one of the more interesting things to me about Austin Matthews and the Austin Matthews story, and it's a wonderful one. You know, as a kid, goes to Coyotes games. You know, who hasn't had this experience with either themselves or their children? First thing you notice and can't get their eyes away from the Zamboni. Fascinated with the Zamboni. It's his favorite thing. Dad, I want to go watch the Zamboni. And then his favorite hockey player becomes Daniel Briere, and he becomes a big Daniel Briere fan. And now he's
think
the same
Leafs sign him now?
What's that? Yeah, Leafs should sign him as a mentor. But the interesting thing to me about Austin Matthews is, and we had a lot of, again, second-generation hockey players in this year's draft, whether it was Tkachuk, whether it was Nylander, go right down the list. Bellows, a lot of second-generation guys. He has family that played football. Matthews does. He has family that played baseball.
Very well, too.
But exceedingly well.
Yeah.
But that family started hockey from zero.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And usually if you ask all these kids, my dad played a little bit, you know, my cousin played a little bit, all my friends played. He started from zero. Like, this is a hockey player that went from absolutely zero hockey in his family to first overall.
So you think he wants to play?
Here's the thing. I was talking to an Arizona scout a couple of weeks ago, and said, you know, anything with Austin Matthews in and around the Coyotes? He goes, well, listen, last year at rookie camp, day one, July, rookie camp, who's at the glass watching rookie camp?
Mm-hmm.
Austin Matthews.
Well, and so for all these people putting their kids on skates when they're 2 years old, maybe a little bit of enlightenment there, a little bit of perspective. No, and he wears 34 because his grandfather and dad wore 34, and they were excellent baseball players. But I know it's a similar story. Justin Ablocator had a teacher that was a Red Wing fan, and his parents wanted nothing to do with hockey. They wanted soccer, and he talked them into, can I please, you know, play? And he ends up being a Detroit Red Wing. So yeah. I love those stories, and I love the fact when you know some guy, it shows his initiative, it shows his stick-to-itiveness, his work ethic, his ability to talk about achieve, to say, I want to play hockey to be the number one overall pick. I don't know how many years it took. But that's, to me, other assets you weigh in the Toronto Maple Leafs' favor, I think.
And you know, to your point about Auston Matthews starting from zero, how scary is that? That there's a lot of, like, the U.S. has got such a plethora of athletes that hockey is never their number one sport.
Aha.
And you know what? All of a sudden, right. a guy like this comes out of nowhere. Everyone else is like, are you kidding? Maybe I'll take this sport. Maybe I'll bypass baseball, football, and I'll give it a shot. I mean, that is the effect of what Wayne Gretzky had down in California and all these other places. You're starting to see how his effect down south is happening now. A guy like Auston Matthews out of nowhere, not playing the game. Look where he is now. There's going to be a lot more like that coming out of the U.S.
I think the eye-opening moment for that, and I think this young man's name is going to come up when we talk to Jarmo Kekäläinen, is Seth Jones. I think the point that you're trying to make is, what's if you're the rest of the world and you're concerned about international competition against the United States, the scary thing now, by the way, 12 Americans in the first round. An outstanding
and 9
first
from
round,
the national program.
Yeah. Right? An outstanding draft for USA Hockey. The scary thing for the rest of the world now is, to your point, Todd, the elite level athletes are choosing hockey first. Mm-hmm. And Seth Jones should have been an eye-opener for everybody. You know, Seth Jones, of course, father Popeye Jones, basketball back, he chose hockey. Auston Matthews, you mentioned football background, more specifically a baseball background, chose hockey. When the elite athletes are not saying, I'm going to go basketball, I'm going to go baseball, I'm going to...
Especially football. Especially football.
Football is a huge one.
Yeah.
But are choosing hockey first. That's when that program goes from here all the way up here. And we're starting to see that now in USA Hockey.
Well, you started with Miracle on Ice in 1980, and that got it growing on a national landscape. Yep. And then part of the problem, we've kidded about it before, you'd go scout guys, and the player would look great, but the competition, it dwarfed the competition. You couldn't tell when this guy played in serious competition what it would be like. So this whole national program, that was one of the reasons, to provide the competition for the players and help the scouts evaluate under better circumstances. Now, it's evolved phenomenally beyond that, but that's exactly it. And Seth Jones, he was in Toronto was when he started loving hockey more. Yeah. He loved Coach's Corner. Yeah. He's watching it. So Popeye Jones is trying to figure where to get him. Then, oops, gets moves to Denver. What the hell do I do? Then he's in working out, and Joe Sakic's there working out too because they share the workout facility. And he goes and asks him, okay, what could I do here? I got a kid. He's a pretty good hockey player. We're just starting. And Joe directs him to the best program in Denver, and there you go.
And you know, it's funny because Shane Doan was talking about him too. He did an interview and talking about when he came on the ice with him. He practiced with those guys last year. Yeah. And so, and you could listen to Shane Doan's interview, and it's just like, the kid's, he's good. Like, it's just like, he doesn't have to say a lot. He's like, he's good.
But that, to Gord's point, though, about, you know, the Arizona program, and, you know, this, in a lot of ways, this is the story of USA Hockey, and it's also the story about St. Louis as well. And you look at that pipeline. I can remember when, you know, Cam Janssen went from St. Louis to the OHL playing with Guelph. And I thought, okay, what a novelty that is, a kid from St. Louis playing in the OHL. Now you go right down the list, whether it's, you know, Tkachuk, whether it's Luca Pilka, the goaltender for the Kitchener Rangers. You look at Ryan McInnes, son of Al. Like, that pipeline between St. Louis and the OHL is open wide. The thing about Arizona is, and if you talk to Louis DeBrusque, he'll tell you his son Jake, who played there as well in the same program as Auston Matthews. You talk to Claude Lemieux, his son Brendan, played in that Arizona organization.
The agent
as well.
Claude Lemieux?
That's right, yeah. The agent Claude Lemieux. Thank you
He's
very
doing
much.
Well,
former NHL, a Conn Smythe Trophy winner. And the issue right now that Arizona has, and this will all work itself in time when there's just, you know, the volume of athlete to choose from, is the first two lines are real good. They have high-end guys. It's filling out an entire roster with quality because there's a real drop-off. After a certain point, they don't have those consistent teams yet. But you can't help but thinking, now that Auston Matthews has become that phenomenon, is the number one overall draft pick, if that program doesn't get a shot in the arm.
Well, they can't. The St. Louis program is an excellent example because they can't travel the way the St. Louis program traveled. I mean, they just can't drive. Like, I remember talking to Rob Ramage years ago, Kelly Chase years ago, all these guys. They got it going. If you were playing serious hockey in St. Louis every week, somebody came from far to play four games that weekend against you, or you drove a long way to play four games against somebody else. They recognize that we have to do that. So that's what they were doing every week. Arizona's a bit more out there to do that. Those were long enough drives from St. Louis. They're not, and I really do think that's, even though a lot of people say, what are you driving all these? But that was a point to get it to that next level. That what, five St. Louis guys, five guys connected to St. Louis were picked in the first round.
Yeah.
No, I was just going to say, did we actually find out if this was the most players ever drafted from an offspring, like from second generation NHL players?
Oh, second generation guys?
We were thinking about that because, I mean, you were talking about that earlier. Yeah. And I think that's, it'll be interesting to find out, but I think that could have been the most amount of players ever drafted that were second-generation players in the National
League. And Griffin Luce didn't get drafted.
Yeah,
jeez,
that's tough.
Cliff Ronning's kid just got drafted at the end. But, yeah, you saw it kept coming, the lineage.
Speaking at the end, something that really bothered me, and I know it bothered a lot of people, too. Get your thoughts on it as well. 30th overall. Okay, remember the 30th overall pick? Sam Steele goes to Anaheim. And the moment he's announced, everybody from the tables stands up and gets prepared to leave. And they start walking out even before the guy gets up on stage. And I'm thinking to myself, we talk about how respectful hockey people are. We talk about how, you know, you mind your P's and Q's and you do the right thing and you don't try to embarrass anybody. I'm watching Sam Steele of the Regina Pats, who lost his brother 5 years ago, has gone through numerous injuries, have his moment, first round draft pick. Right, 30th overall, the Anaheim Ducks. He's walking up the stage, and all those tables are packing up and leaving. And I was thinking to myself, shame on you guys. Let this kid have his moment. Let this kid have his moment at the draft. And then when you can't wait an extra 5 minutes, guys, to let Sam Steele have his moment on stage. Like, the minute the pick is made, folders are done, and everyone's walking out.
Mm-hmm.
Let the kid have his moment. I know it's 30th, and you want to get your drink on, but let the kid have his moment. 5 minutes for Sam Steele.
I can understand the seventh round to a degree, and years ago when it was the 12th round.
But this is the first guys are clear. Round.
I know. On Friday, it was a long night, but you're right. And maybe that'll be, just you saying it, will be the harbinger of things to come, because you're absolutely right. Being, you know, like a lot of these guys, particularly rounds 2 through 7, you go out in the parking lot Saturday, you see all these kids with number 16s on their back and certain jerseys, right?
Yeah,
and you go,
yeah.
And you know what? For one day, they're part of the organization.
Yeah.
They may never play again. But in the first round, you know, they may never play an NHL game there. But the first round, it's a special thing on Friday. So you're right. Like, come on. You can wait. You can wait 5 minutes. Seriously. Yeah.
I don't care if you're at the back or you're right there in front.
Yeah.
Just sit there and polite applause. Let that 30th overall pick have his moment.
Because you know they're all there. It's different like later rounds. You're not sure who's there or is not. Yeah. You know, so you can kind of argue that. But if you're going to be picked in the first round or close, you are there.
At the end of the day, Sam Steele, I'm sure, is fine with it. He got picked in the first round. Think about the guys that thought they were going to go, and all of a sudden, oh, man, now I got to wait a second day. I got to come back again and do it again. So, yeah, I agree to your point, Jeff. I think it's a very valid point. I think they should show a little bit more respect. But at the end of the day, I think, and I can speak from experience, I went 240th overall. There was nobody there. And I'm including fans, everybody. I went up like I was a first-round pick. I didn't care. I was jumping and screaming. But
did you get a jersey?
No, they ran out. They didn't know who I was.
I think when Luke Robitaille was selected, he went down. Didn't have the proper pass to let him in.
Either did I. It's fine.
And they didn't have a jersey for Robitaille, so I think they gave him a pin.
Yeah.
Los Angeles gave him a pin.
He showed them.
My thing was, they didn't have a jersey or nothing for me. They felt bad. So it was David Poile and Jack Button at the time were in Washington. And I go down, and they didn't have a jersey. They didn't have nothing. And one of the sons of one of the scouts had a Washington Capitals hat on. They took it off of him and gave me the hat. I felt terrible, but I took it anyways, and I ran with it.
They give him a little voucher. This is worth one jersey when you go to the Capitals store.
Then I owe you. We owe you a jersey. It was kind of funny.
Cap store in Landover then. Interesting, because I was just looking up your draft the other day, and I found that two picks from the bottom, Leo Gudas, Radko Gudas' dad. That's a 1990 draft, and I guess the two remaining players still on the NHL ice from 1990 are Jaromir Jagr and Wes McCauley.
Oh, yeah. Trick question.
Red Wings.
Trick question. That's right.
A curveball for you. Jaromir Kekalainen is going to join us here in a couple of moments. But a couple of things from the first round specifically. Pierre-Luc Dubois was a surprise. I know Trent Frederick snuck up on a lot of people for the Boston Bruins, although there was some indication that Anaheim was interested. Maybe the Maple Leafs would have in the early second round picked up the American that ended up being the 12th. Americans selected in the first round. Surprises for you guys?
Well, everyone talks about Chikrin moving down. It seems we're, again, consensus because you hear so much about him. I was kind of surprised Benning didn't bite on Tkachuk, but he's been upfront that he wants to develop the D and made the Gabranson trade and that. But Otherwise, I liked Ottawa moving up one. They want the big gun. They want the big stud at center.
Yep.
And they went big. They even just moved up one spot. So the Devils play pretty good poker doing that.
We're going to hold on to Todd's thoughts here in a couple of seconds because Jarmo Kekalainen joins us. Columbus Blue Jackets general manager selecting Pierre-Luc Dubois at number three. Jarmo, thanks for joining us. How are you today, sir?
My pleasure. I'm good. How are you guys doing today?
We're well. We've talked plenty leading up to the draft and since, and a little bit more this afternoon, Jarmo, about Pierre-Luc Dubois, who's a very interesting young man, an accomplished hockey player. Physically, looks like he's ready for the NHL. He's put on 30 pounds, I want to say, in the last couple of seasons. And when you and I spoke on Friday, you really beat home the point that you see Pierre-Luc Dubois as a centerman, even though he's only played it consistently for a few months. Why do you see him as a centerman?
Well, I think it's very rare that a winger can step in and play center as well as he did, read the game defensively as well as he did, being as responsible and strong in the defensive end as he was right off the bat, getting better and better in the face-offs. It's not easy to do. So it looked like a position that came very naturally to him. Obviously, the versatility is a good thing, and if it seems like he's not quite ready to play center in the NHL level yet, then we'll start him as a winger. But we see a lot of potential for him to play center for many, many years to come in the National Hockey League, and the versatility is a plus.
Are you the only Finnish hockey executive who's anti-Finnish?
I'm definitely not anti-Finnish at all.
You kept throwing that out about your track record. We all wondered about that. But anyway, you were...
But I'm a little bit harder probably on Finns just because I just want to make sure that nationality has nothing to do with our drafts. And I love my country and I've always been very proud to represent my country. I've played for the national team. I've been part of the national team management for many different tournaments. And I love my country, but I work for the Columbus Blue Jackets and always try to do the best for that team.
Yeah, you'd be proud about three Finns in the top five, that's for sure, and you share in that. So you talk about the center thing, like, you know, with Ryan Johansson being moved, things like that, like how much the attractiveness of being center, if that was a deciding point between one or the other, how might that have factored in?
Not at all. We always talk about selecting the best player available, in our opinion, and... you know, when people ask us, how was your draft? Well, we'll always say that we'll see in 5 years. And that's, sometimes it might take two, sometimes three before guys, your drafts are ready to make an impact on the NHL level. But this is about the career, and that's the potential for the career is the way we rank them. And our ranking was this, and Pierre-Luc Dubois was the guy that we wanted. And it's as simple as that. It has nothing to do with the position.
You know, Jarmo, is it obviously just back with Pierre-Luc Dubois again? We were talking about this earlier, and I just think one of the things that is really attractive about this player is the fact that he's just a beast in all three zones. Is that one of the things that attracted to him as well, is that he's just an all-around player in every single zone?
Yeah, definitely. But I keep coming back to the character and hockey sense thing, that those are the two qualities that we always look for in a player. You know, scouting is very easy when you just look at the shots, like skating ability and speed and all those things, the physical attributes of the game. But the hockey sense is the hardest part to evaluate, and you need to watch the players time and time again to make sure that you evaluate that part correctly and know the player inside out. And the character takes the same or even more amount of time to get to know. And everything with Pierre-Luc Dubois checks unbelievable. And great on those areas. His hockey sense is tremendous. His character's through the roof. And when you talk to the people, his coaches and people that have worked with him, his teachers, you know, all those people that we talked to about Pierre-Luc, they all rave about him, about his character, his willingness to work, his desire to get better, all those things. So I can't say enough about his character. We believe in character. We believe in hockey sense. And those are the things that we feel that will make him the best player available at number three.
Let's jump to your third round pick, and I'm hopefully pronouncing this right. Vitali Abramov, is that
Abramov? Yeah, no.
So he's got a pretty unique story. I mean, he survived a meteor strike in his hometown of Russia in 2013. If people don't know that, and they said that the size of the meteor was like 50 to 55 feet in size and weighed approximately 10 tons. So I'm just wondering to you, are you hoping that Vitali is going to get some of this meteor energy found in that, and kind of like the way Superman was, and maybe he's going to be your superhero on this team from this day forward?
I don't go quite that far in my analysis. trying to figure out.
You don't have a Blue Jackets cape for him, Guillermo?
Where they get their strength. But 93 points in his first year in North America, the Quebec League, is a pretty good accomplishment. I like the way he plays with a little chip on his shoulder. He doesn't. He refuses to think that he's not that big. He plays big. He competes and goes to the tough areas to score goals. And just watching him first day here, we like what we're seeing, the attitude that he brings onto the practice and the development camp that we have going on right now. I think he's the type of small guy that can play in the National Hockey League with the ability to skate. And again, the way he battles and doesn't think of himself as a small guy.
First in rookie scoring, fifth in the QMJHL. Vitali Abramov, third round of the Columbus Blue Jackets. The general manager, Jarmo Kekalainen, joins us right now. And the other headline coming out of Columbus outside of the picks, Jarmo, the Kirby Reichel trade in exchange for Scott Harrington, the defenseman, and a conditional. I don't think it was exactly a secret that Reichel wasn't necessarily happy with Columbus. Some speculation he would have been moved at deadline. I think he was actually went off the ice in practice that day. But was this a trade that was a long time coming for you?
Well, I've never gone public about anything of his willingness to request a trade or any of that. I like Kirby Reichel. I think he's a good kid. I think he's going to be a good hockey player in the National Hockey League. And sometimes trades happen. And we felt we got a good defenseman, Scott Harrington. And we wish the best of luck to Kirby Reichel. That's pretty much all I want to say about it. The not being in practice at the deadline was just a precaution on the talks that we had going on at that time.
Let me then circle back to the draft as well. Number three, we believe a number of teams coveted that spot. Calgary, perhaps, Vancouver, many others, Montreal. Were you ever close? I mean, I'm sure you must have had some plenty of offers that gave you cause for pause. Were you ever close to pulling the trigger on something?
Yeah, I actually thought that we had a deal done, but then it fell apart in the last second. But we didn't want to move anywhere where we couldn't get Pierre-Luc Dubois. So,
right.
It was a small trade and small movement back that we thought we had the deal done, but it fell apart. And that's why we picked him at three.
You mentioned you got like developmental camp going on. How are you? I guess, what is the philosophy after last year was such a great finish and then such an unfortunate start this year for the team? I mean, when you've looked at it as far as things you do in the off season or what have you, of course, it's a different coach, for example. What's different this year than, say, last year to try to protect against what happened last season?
Well, we're going to look at everything, obviously, trying to get better here. We're young, and I think we're going to get better from just experience. And having gone through that adversity that we did last year, I think how you learn from it, how you react to it, how you become stronger because of it is the key here. I think we're going to use that as a motivation moving into the next year. Nobody believes in us right now. I think we believe in us for sure. We know we're much better than the start that we had last year. I think that's going to be a great motivation for our group.
Well, listen, on that, we'll let you get on with your day. Once again, congratulations on the Pierre-Luc Dubois selection. I mean, Andrew Peake's nice in the second round, and Abramov's probably a steal in the third as well, and the Kirby Reichel, Scott Harrington deal. Exciting times in Columbus. Best of luck as free agency approaches, and best of luck next season. Thanks for joining us, Jarmo.
Thank you very much.
Jarmo Kekalainen, general manager of the Columbus Blue Jackets. You guys cover the Maple Leafs consistently. What do you guys make of the Reichel deal?
I was going to say, I think that this is a situation of two players getting a fresh start, albeit they're young guys and stuff, and that's what I think. I think this is a situation. Scott Harrington's a good, great defenseman. He played for Team Canada for a bunch of years in the World Juniors. Kirby Reichel's a fantastic player as well, and I think that this is just a situation where two guys going in different, with different organizations, mm-hmm. hopefully is going to get them back on track. And I love the move for Toronto. I think Kirby Reichel's got absolutely tremendous upside. I think it's a great pickup.
Yeah, and maybe the victim of too many wingers on Columbus and sort of buried underneath that.
Okay, let's get it.
A lot of bodies.
Let's get it simple. Losing sucks, okay? Mm-hmm. It just does. And it permeates everything in the organization. Everything gets off kilter. Your players in the American Hockey League get more frustrated. They're not up. So Toronto theoretically could have moved in and making the best of a bad scenario. And this is where your pro scouts are so important. So I certainly, and knowing his father, Warren, a little bit from years ago, would be happy to take a flyer for Scott Harrington on Kirby Reichel that way. And the other one is It's the one time all year we can bring every general manager on and tell him he had a good draft. No, because everyone
true.
That's the neat part. It's the neat part about the draft. And you could hear Yarmo and you know, you bring up the different guys. They're all prospects right now. It's you've survived. You're employed for another year. You can put it behind you. So yeah. It's the first day of the rest of your life for every NHL team. And it's fun on this day and throughout the summer chatting all the what-ifs if these guys work out.
And Gord, true or false, as an ex-general manager, you also get the script that says, when asked about my prospect at the draft, you always say, I was surprised
he was available.
Yes, he was available when we selected him. Speaking of Warren Reichel, they did a nice little bit of business, Windsor Spitfires, picking up Elias Natanen from the Barrie Colts, first-line center there. So they're hosting the MasterCard Memorial Cup next season, so good things on the horizon for the Windsor Spitfires. Anything we missed before we go to break? You guys want to get off your chest?
I love that story. Was reading about the meteor. Like, did you guys?
I didn't know about that. Yeah. I mean, I know a lot about Abramoff, but just watching playing in Gatineau.
It was, I guess, he was in 2013, February 2013. Yeah. There was a meteor that huge size, and I believe it had
the superhero stuff. Might have been a stretch.
Well, a little bit, but I mean, it was believed to be 300 to 500 kiloton explosion. And over top that, it shattered the windows in the schools, everything. They were rattled, and no one knew what was happening. But how scary is that? A meteor over top you blowing up. And then he comes over to Canada, and he's pretty happy to be out of where he was, I guess. And he moves forward. But pretty wild story.
Good program, Gatineau, with Benoit Groulx. The only thing that I've heard, I mean, size is always the size of a smallish hockey player. But the scouts that I talked to leading up to the draft about Abramoff was he needs that extra gear. That speed to the outside to really destroy a defenseman doesn't have that. But as far as being an exciting hockey player and, you know, to Yarmo's point, not being afraid to go to high traffic areas, not being afraid to get bruised to score a goal, that's Abramoff.
Yeah.
He's an exciting guy to watch.
You're 5'8", you have to.
No first round picks move. That was the only thing. I was, you know, a good trade for Montreal. I think getting Andrew Shaw, good for Chicago. Cap situation.
What are they paying Shaw? Discussing with some people this morning. What are they? Now, Philip Forsberg just signed 6x6.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the Brandon Saad contract. That's a nice deal for the Nashville Predators. What does that mean for Jaden Schwartz? What does it mean for Nikita Kucherov in Tampa? What do they sign Andrew Schott? He was looking for 4.5 from Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Does he get it in Montreal?
I think so, particularly when you make a trade for a guy. I think, and Bergevin, he knows Bergevin likes him, was with Chicago when he was drafted. So I think he gets thereabouts, close to that kind of, I mean, Montreal's taking him not to be a fourth line guy, whatever. I mean, he sees something in him. Yeah. And moving in for the kill.
He's a GM. He knows. If I was a player, I'd ask for 5. But I think 4.5 is probably where he's going to get.
Wow. What a deal for Nashville. 6x6 for Philip Forsberg, guys.
21 years old.
What a deal for Philip Forsberg.
That's a great deal for Philip Forsberg. But, I mean, look, Vlad Tarasenko in at $7.5 million. What's Johnny Gaudreau going to get if Philip Forsberg is 6x6?
Well, I would pay Tarasenko more than Forsberg. That's not a slight against Forsberg. Cap is a little bit static right now. Hometown discount to a degree.
I don't know if those exist really.
To a degree. Okay. Degree. I mean, it's $6 million a discount to a degree. And, interesting, a lot of free agents out there that are tough finding homes because of salary cap situation.
How good does that trade look right now for Nashville? Where's Martin Erat?
Where's George McPhee? Made the deal. That was stiff. We'll take a break.
He'll be in Vegas.
I know what he's saying now.
I'd like to have that deal back.
Yeah.
Although, you know what, at the time,
you never know.
In that general manager's defense, I mean, one more thing before we get a break. In that general manager's defense, at the time, when he knew that his job was on the line, and he made that deal thinking he was going to make Washington better right now.
Yep.
And, you know, it's always been said that coaches don't buy green bananas, but certain times when your job is on the line, GMs can't buy green bananas either.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And Forsberg, he was a bit of a later pick, too. You know what I mean?
Like 12th, just, I want to say. Yeah. He was later.
Yeah.
He fell.
I mean, so he's been an overachiever.
No one has a crystal ball. If we had crystal balls, then they'd be making every decision would be right.
All right. We hit a break. We'll come back, talk a little bit about Hockey Hall of Fame, a little bit more on the Forsberg deal, and the, Stamkos sweepstakes. Poised to heat up starting tomorrow. Hockey Central at noon continues. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet, and the NHL Network stateside.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. Now more Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Welcome back to the program, Hockey Central at noon. Jeff Merrick for Darren Millard alongside Gord Stellick and Todd Hlushko. I want to thank Yarmo Kekäläinen, Columbus Blue Jackets general manager, for dropping by the program, talking about Pierre-Luc Dubois, talking about the Kirby Reichel trade.
And talking about having a trade that fell apart the last second, right? It didn't sound like they'd be moving too far
down. It's funny, too, because Elliot talked to Peter Chiarelli. on Friday after the draft and asked Peter, GM of the Edmonton Oilers, you know, how close were you? And he said, well, we had one offer that would have seen us moving down, and then an even bigger offer, an even bigger package that would have seen us moving up. Of course, both never happened, but, you know, two general managers quite open to talking about how two deals were kind of close. But don't we do this every year?
Every year.
We do this every year about how trades are going to be the big deal, because anytime you get a lot of general managers all, you know, all in one area or headed in the right direction to the same geographic location, there's going to be talk, there's going to be chatter, there's going to be rumors. I can remember the Philadelphia draft. Aaron Ekblad goes first overall. There's a big offer on the table from the Philadelphia Flyers. They wanted to steal the show, draft first overall. Also a big offer from the Tampa Bay Lightning, which included Jonathan Drouin, I think Vasilevsky as well, and their first-round pick, which turned into Anthony DeAngelo, who's now gone to the Arizona Coyotes. Another nice bit of business Arizona did over the weekend by GM John Chyka. So there's always the rumors. Like, one of the great books that has to be written sometime, and you can probably have a chapter in this, The Greatest Trades That Never Happened,
yeah.
are really in there, right?
And I think the lack of movement in this trade, obviously, a lot of the entry-level contracts become a lot more valuable too, especially with the expansion that's coming next year and the rules that are coming. It makes it that much more difficult to move players because, you know, you want to make sure that you have your team aligned properly for the expansion draft. Yeah. And those entry-level contracts, most of them guys that are under 2 years, they don't have to be protected. So you want to be moving those things too much because then all of a sudden you put your team at a disadvantage.
Also a good idea to have a couple of duds.
Of course.
A couple of dud contracts on there just to float to see if there's a nibble.
We like you. You're a dud. Say what? Well, it's a unique season.
Yeah. How do you like Vegas, young man? Okay, we're going to get to the Stamkos sweepstakes here in a couple of seconds, but Hall of Fame, we'll find out today who ends up going in. I'm, like a lot of people, have been banging the Eric Lindros drum for years and years and years. I know that the Hall of Fame selection committee, and you need to look no further than Pat Burns, can harbor some grudges for a long, long time. And I understand that Eric Lindros, for various reasons, didn't curry favor with some of the people that perhaps may be making the selection. But I thought the moment they put Pavel Bure in, that became the comparable for his numbers. And in a lot of ways, they were chumming the waters for one day, Eric Lindros making his way into the Hockey Hall of Fame, where personally, I think he belongs. You wonder if today's the day that 88 finally gets the phone call of Gort.
He's never really lobbied for it, you know, to his credit. There also were a few years of phenomenal graduating classes. There really were, which no disrespect to those this year. It's not quite the same. So I'm with you, like our good friend Dan Shulman on the baseball side. But when we did when I would be on his radio show a little bit years ago, he loved the Hall of Fame game because we were talking. I think it might have been about the baseball Hall of Fame, but it morphed into hockey. And I just said, if I'm picking a Hall of Famer, I don't want one sheet of paper. I don't need anything. Just give me a name. Is he a Hall of Famer or not? And that's what it should take. It should take like 2 seconds. Like, why do you need a case? Hall of Famers. So mine are Eric Lindros, Dave Andrechuk. I think a builder like Pat Quinn could go in, particularly with his Hall of Fame connections. I mean, deservedly so, but particularly with he was well connected there. And then the other guys I could live or die with, you know, the Jeremy Roenicks of the world, the Mark Recchies of the world, the whatevers. But those are the two, if you're asking me, I would say Eric Lindros, Dave Andrechuk.
Well, I know that I'm getting old when I played with guys who are going into the Hall of Fame.
Your 1990 draft, son. Come on.
Well, I had a chance, and the way I look at it from a player standpoint is I look at the guys that I played against or had the opportunity to play with or against. And I didn't have a long NHL career, but I had a chance to play with Lindros for a little bit in Philadelphia and played against him a lot, obviously, in junior. And then I got a chance to play against him lots when I was in Calgary. So I look at a guy that, when I'm playing against somebody, how difficult is it to play against them? How dominant is he? Eric Lindros was as dominant a power forward as anyone has ever been, as there ever been in the National Hockey League. This guy deserves to be in it. He does everything the right way. He's done at the international level, at every level. He deserves to be there. The only other guy that I compared to him in terms of the power forward that was so hard to play against was Peter Forsberg. And we all know how great he is. Those two guys, from a player standpoint, in my generation, when I played against these guys, these were the two of the most dominant players. So does Eric Lindros deserve to be there? 100%. And I also agree with Gord. I believe Dave Andrechuk should get in as well.
Still leads in the NHL in power play goals. Has won his Stanley Cup. Not that that should necessarily determine whether you get in or not. Otherwise, we wouldn't see Gilbert Perreault or Marcel Dion. But the thing about Lindros to me has always been he became a prototypical player. Now, we've seen big centermen before. They can move their feet. John Beliveau may have been, you know, one of the first to have that height and be able to move his feet in the soft hands. But we never saw anyone with the ferocity, even though Beliveau in his first couple of years, 100 penalty minutes, was kind of a dirty-ish hockey player that no one ever talks about. But Lindros would, to your point, I mean, he would cave guys in on a consistent basis. He was going to the net, and you could do two things about it. Nothing and like it. And that was it. And now, and ever since then, when you saw a big centerman, and the first person I think of is always Chris Gratton. You see a big centerman that can move his feet and has some hands. He is a Eric Lindros type. Not unlike when we saw the power forward on the wing. Anyone became, who you know, big, strong winger, burly, could fight, could score up with Cam Neely type.
Yeah, Cam Neely, Clark Gillis, right.
Yeah, became that type. But to me, when you become a prototype of a player, that should really raise the eyebrows and say there's something there. And to your other point, as a peak performer, now longevity was an issue. He wasn't Gordy. But as a peak performer, that Legion of Doom line and number 88 specifically was as good a hockey player in that generation as we had.
I still think, you know, since we try to bring up that term generational player, and the last one, Connor McDavid, but Wayne Gretzky, Mary Lemieux, Eric Lindros, Sidney Crosby, Connor McDavid. And those are the ones. And the only guy who could be in the Hall of Fame or could, is not in the Hall of Fame that could be is Eric Lindros. And you mentioned, you know, that part about it. What about off the ice, about the value of franchises now? I mean, Wayne Gretzky and the expansion to California, huge. Mario saves the Pittsburgh team twice. Player and then off the ice. And then you've got Eric Lindros and, okay, all that money changing hands, helping Colorado win a Stanley Cup with all the players changing hands, but Philadelphia using him to sell boxes, all these other things to help bring the NHL to that new level of prosperity for everyone, including the teams and the owners.
I'm glad you mentioned that because one of the reasons, and this always gets lost in the conversation, one of the reasons why Eric didn't want to go to Quebec is because the Nordiques were going to be sold. And Eric Lindros did not want to be an underpaid piece of that sale that was going to put an extra $50 million in Marcelo Boo's pocket.
Well, he got tainted. Or shows you talk about misperception, that being anti-Quebec. And he was actually anti-Quebec Nordique organization. He actually got married in Montreal, of all places. His wedding, he's got a summer place in Quebec. That he loves. So it just, but he, you know.
It's an easy story. Right? Oh, he must hate the French.
But
he hasn't. So lazy.
The thing about
it's completely
him is,
lazy.
He's such a different personality since he's retired. I think there was the team, Eric, when he was playing that, you know, you're on this roller coaster and, you know, it's just pretty focused and maybe not that personal and fun loving. And then it gets a little bitter at the end with the Philadelphia Flyers. The father that brought you in the world is then throwing you out with expletives and all that. So you get tainted with that. And then, you know, he's been pretty laid back and chill about everything. And I've liked that part about it. He's never complained about anything. But, you know, he actually, that's why he didn't want to go there. And he never goes pro about those other things. But he's a fun guy to be around now.
I just think you got to look at the body of work. Like you said, it's not huge. He couldn't do anything about the concussions that happened. He was unfortunate that it cut his career short. But the sample size that he has when he was in there, he was as dominant as a player that there is in the game.
Away. And I thought that when they put Pavel Bure in there, that was the beginning of, we're going to put someone in the Hall of Fame that has numbers that are similar to Eric Lindros. So if there's ever a question when we put him in about his production, we can point to Pavel Bure as a comparable. And you do wonder if today's the day. Really quickly, want to get a couple thoughts on Steven Stamkos. Where does he end up? Everyone has their own feelings. Toronto's in the bidding. We know Buffalo is going to be in there. Pavel Datsyuk's contract's been moved. Now they can afford to bring in someone like Steven Stamkos. Throw darts, boys. Where's Stamkos going?
I hope Toronto. I think Buffalo or Detroit.
I still got a feeling that Tampa Bay, he may still end up back in Tampa Bay. If it comes down to money.
Yeah, what's Kucherov going to get then?
Oh, I know. It's scary. I just think that maybe if he wants to win, it's up to him. If he wants to win, I think he stays in Tampa Bay. If he wants to go to a place that he wants to be at home, maybe comes to Toronto.
What do you think?
I still think Toronto. I think it's a QEW rivalry. It's going to be the push and pull, the warp and woof between Toronto and Buffalo, which is going to add another layer of intrigue in the Babcock versus Bylsma, the Nylander versus Nylander, the Eichel versus Matthews. The QEW rivalry is about to become one of the best in the NHL. It's marinating now, and it just needs a little bit more time.
Just get the traffic moving.
I was going to say, get your Nexus pass soon.
Talk to you tomorrow.